when we're making law, we're going to get down to specifics, and it's not consensus driven. It is vote driven.
Lawmakers work on justice system reforms. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state Republicans scurry to secure a delegate spot.
So we just now have to make sure that our guys fill out the form. You know, it's one more thing to do before 9 o'clock in the morning.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
What can a tiny piece of dust do to you? It can stop you in your tracks. Studies show exposure to dust pollution can cause tightness in your chest, wheezing, and shortness of breath, even if you're healthy. When you're on an unpaved road, drive slowly, especially when operating an ATV. When hauling dirt, cover it up. Do your part, avoid dust, and clear the air. We'll all breathe easier. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
The legislature didn't do much work today as lawmakers moved into their temporary digs while the Capitol is under construction. When House members return on Monday, they'll debate whether to overhaul the state's criminal sentencing laws. Supporters say the legislation will lower the risk of offenders returning to crime. But others are concerned the bill goes too far in reducing penalties. APRN's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Senate Bill 91 is one of the most hotly debated bills of the session. It would substitute citations for arrests for low-level nonviolent offenses. It also would focus prison beds on more serious and violent offenders and create a reentry program within the Department of Corrections. But the House Finance Committee scaled back some of these changes. Committee members cited concerns from some victims' rights advocates who say the bill isn't tough enough on offenders. Bill sponsor North Pole Republican Senator John Coghill says he remains hopeful that the bill will become law. He emphasizes the benefits of a pretrial program that would divert low-risk prisoners away from jail.
We're going to do risk-based assessments for the first time ever in pretrial. It's still there. We're going to allow them for diversion to programs for the first time ever the way we're doing it under a risk-based system.
Coghill based the original bill on the recommendations of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. For example, the commission recommended raising the value of items that are stolen that require criminal charges from $750 to $2,000. The House Finance Committee settled on raising the limit to $1,000. But Finance Committee co-chairman Big Lake Republican Mark Newman was troubled by the possibility of letting thieves go because they stole less than $1,000 of valuables.
And it seems to me like we're trying to make it so, let's make it so that a crook has a lighter sentence or gets off easier here because of inflation. And I don't like that. A crook is a crook.
Alaska Public Defender Quinlan Steiner says that while the amended House bill, as well as the version passed by the Senate, would save less than the original legislation, the effects would still be positive.
The bill, as I see it, will likely still result in significant savings that can be used to reinvest in programs that will reduce recidivism.
Coghill says his original bill would have cut the state's prison population by 21%, saving more than $400 million a year. He says the House Finance Committee substitute would reduce the prison population by roughly 8 to 10%. The House is scheduled to debate and potentially vote on whether to pass or amend the measure on Monday. Coghill says he expects a debate over whether to require jail time for lower-level crimes. Another debate will likely focus on how much credit people in pretrial programs should receive to reduce jail time. Coghill says he welcomes the legislative debate over the bill.
It just goes to show that when we're making law, we're going to get down to specifics, and it's not consensus-driven. It is vote-driven. And so that's appropriate. That's what the process is all about.
The crime bill is the most significant bill left on the legislature's agenda that's not primarily focused on the budget. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Juneau police arrested a man late last night for driving while intoxicated after finding him and a dog in a vehicle stuck in construction fencing at the Capitol. Police say that 49-year-old Alexander Oliphant volunteered that he had run into the governor's mansion, too. Video surveillance showed a car ramming the garage door, which was damaged. The investigation is ongoing, and additional charges are pending. The Iditarod Trail Committee Board released a statement today regarding rules related to musher conduct. Recent reports of domestic violence charges against Seward musher Travis Beals have prompted Iditarod officials to disallow any 2017 application from him. The statement says Beals will be out of the Iditarod for 2017 and for an indefinite period of time thereafter, saying the duration will be dependent on successful completion of court-ordered rehabilitation. 24-year-old Beals was in court in Palmer on Tuesday for a domestic violence charge that was filed before the 2016 Iditarod race. In an earlier May 2015 domestic violence assault charge, he pleaded guilty to a lesser offense. A few hundred Republicans are gathered in Fairbanks today for the state party convention. APRN's Liz Ruskin is reporting from there. Liz, you left us with a bit of a cliffhanger yesterday. What's the big news party chairman Peter Goldberg was hinting at?
Okay, you have to remember, this is a gathering of political animals who live and breathe delegate counts. Everybody's wondering if Donald Trump can get the 1,237 delegates he needs to win the nomination. And he's still 200 delegates short. So the big news, so-called big news, here in Fairbanks was that the party central committee decided to keep the allocation of Alaska delegates the same. 12 for Ted Cruz, 11 for Trump, and 5 for Marco Rubio.
Rather than split up the Rubio delegates because he's suspended his campaign?
Right. So maybe not the hugest news. But today the convention, the state convention here in Fairbanks, started the process of deciding who they'll send in to Cleveland in those roles. 160 people have applied, and they have to narrow it to 25 people plus 25 alternates.
Sounds very competitive. How's that going?
It is competitive. The delegate hopefuls, they've got flyers like campaign brochures lying on all the tables. They've got photos and graphics. One woman's picture shows her with an AR-15 on her lap. Jennifer Klutz of Anchor Point, she says she's trying to stand out from the crowd and also, of course, to show her Second Amendment credibility. And meanwhile, the campaigns have people running around with rosters of their preferred delegates, the ones they're sure will remain loyal to their candidate in Cleveland. I followed David Morgan from Anchorage around. He's keeping a list for the Trump campaign. He was kind of agitated last night when he says a new yellow sheet for delegates appeared, and he thought the other campaigns had advanced knowledge.
They're adding an extra form, which some of us don't feel is not necessarily necessary. And so we just now have to make sure that our guys fill out the form. You know, it's one more thing to do before 9 o'clock in the morning. Hold on.
Did you need one of these?
I need 35 of them.
It soon blew over, and that's just the kind of minor tension that's running around here.
So, Liz, Donald Trump does have people working on the ground there.
Yes, they do, and they seem calm and confident that their candidate will win. And then there are people like Mary Bishop.
I'm a never-Trump person.
Mary's from Fairbanks. She says she'd like to be a delegate to Cleveland, but only if she thought it'd be an opportunity to stop Trump. She says Trump seems to inspire his supporters to displays of bigotry.
Reminds me of what happened in Nazi Germany back in the 30s. And that scares me. He may not be that way, but he brings out the people that are that way. And I don't think that's good for the country.
Wow.
Yep, we have all kinds of Republicans here, but it seems to be going quite smoothly with a few outbreaks of any kind of argument.
When does the convention attendees make their final decision on the delegates?
That becomes final tomorrow. The nominations committee has been working on their list behind closed doors for hours. The biggest kerfuffle of the whole convention that I've seen actually was just before they closed the doors when committee chairwoman Paulette Simpson asked members to relinquish their cell phones to avoid any leaks.
All right. Well, thanks, Liz, for being there and for giving us that update. We'll look for more on Monday.
Thanks, Lori.
APRN's Liz Ruskin reporting from the Republican Convention in Fairbanks. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Yukon River ice jam near Eagle releases.
The water has all gone down in the ravine and on Water Street below us, so the river is back to behaving the way it should.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Few people turned out to testify at a public hearing on the Matanuska-Susitna Borough budget in Wasilla last night, but those who did outlined a disturbing trend. Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Wasilla Mayor Bert Cottle faced the Matanuska-Susitna Borough Assembly and told the panel that drug enforcement resources in the valley are overwhelmed.
We have currently have three Alaska State Troopers that are attached to the state drug unit out here. That's it for 100,000 people. And nothing against them people. They're working as hard as they can, but they need help.
Cottle said currently law enforcement officers have their hands full dealing with heroin users when focus needs to be put on the dealers.
So what we've come up with, the city of Palmer and the city of Wasilla, if we can find the funding, each one of us would put one additional police officer on that drug unit.
The cities of Palmer and Wasilla are planning to start a drug enforcement team, which would bring two more law enforcement officers to the valley, one in each city, and Cottle and other speakers at the meeting urged the borough to support a $100,000 request for a one-time line item in the budget to help pay for the extra officers. Wasilla's police chief, Gene Belden, joined Cottle in asking for borough support for a drug task force.
In 2014, our patrol here in Wasilla, just off of traffic stops and regular contacts and everything else, we seized $31,500 worth of drugs, excluding marijuana. In 2015, patrol only in the city here, $152,000. Yeah, that's quite a jump.
Belden said that lack of manpower is cutting enforcement efforts in half.
What we're doing is catching the users. We're not being able to catch the people that are actually dealing or supplying the dealers.
Michelle Overstreet, who provides transient housing for homeless teenagers, says heroin has flooded Wasilla, especially among vulnerable adolescents.
We're doing battle with heroin every single day. We've lost kids to overdose. We've lost kids to addiction. And they're now down a rabbit trail with their heroin use, and we can't find them. Or they come in once in a while, and they're an absolute train wreck.
She said dealers routinely lurk near a teen drop-in center.
And they sit there and wait for the kids that are doing well in our building and that are trying to stay clean and sober to come out. And they're like parasites waiting over there for them to relapse.
Overstreet told the panel that law enforcement is the missing piece in a program to help homeless youth. Mayor Cottle told the assembly that he has also requested help from Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz.
Because the last time I checked, I think the drugs go both ways. It doesn't just stop at the borough line. So if we can do that, that would take that task force from 3 to 6. I think then we can make some changes.
Cottle told the assembly that the budget request would be contingent on the cities of Palmer and Wasilla raising enough money to pay the $260,000 a year needed for the additional officers.
Meyer Hutchinson, spokesman for the Berkowitz administration, says the Anchorage mayor supports the concept of the drug enforcement team. But at this time, as Anchorage is working to build up its police force, it is not possible to loan an officer to another location. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
An ice jam on the Yukon River below Eagle has released. National Weather Service hydrologist Ed Plum says the jam in place since Tuesday broke up early this morning.
Around 2:45 this morning, the jam about 10 miles downriver near Calico Bluff released, and a resident down there said the water dropped and ice is moving fast and free right now.
Plum says about 50 miles of the river are open before ice cover resumes upstream of Circle.
So the next concern is that large surge of water now moving down toward where the river flattens out and it becomes a lot more braided. Circle is more prone to ice jam flooding than Eagle.
Plum says a river watch team plans to overfly the Yukon today to survey ice conditions in the Circle area and farther downstream at Fort Yukon. Alaska State Troopers, wildlife troopers, are investigating two cases of wanton waste of caribou in northwest Alaska. Troopers found multiple cow caribou killed and left to waste near the Kauk River. They say it's likely the caribou were killed near the beginning of April. Troopers found another kill site 25 miles northwest of the first on the lower Baldwin Peninsula. Kotzebue is on the northern tip of that peninsula. Troopers say three cows were killed and salvaged during this third week of April. Two other cows were killed and left without recovering meat. Troopers also found a mortally wounded cow caribou. Troopers say the incidents are likely unrelated, and they're asking witnesses to call them. Bethel's first liquor store in more than 40 years could open as soon as Monday. AC Quick Stop received the town's first liquor license last fall after decades of restricted alcohol sales. A few details still have to be worked out: security cameras and installing a bulletproof front door. Bethel Police Chief Andre Ashe toured the facility yesterday. Ashe says he expects emergency call volume to increase with the liquor store opening and doesn't know if he'll have the staff to keep up. The police department is budgeted for 15 officers, but currently it only has 6.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Through generous APU scholarship packages and the new APU Promise Tuition Grant Program, APU is a sound educational investment in your future. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The weeks are counting down until the first salmon return home to Alaska rivers and streams. Alaska's people live lives that are deeply connected to salmon. Alaska's economy and families are fueled by these relationships. Learn more about Alaska's salmon at salmonlife.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Little A. How do you begin to cope with the death of your child? JT Lindem is answering that question in part by organizing a triathlon this summer. The event is a fundraiser for the family of an Eagle River girl named Maddie, who died this month of ovarian cancer. Organizing the race has been a lot of work, but it's also been a chance for JT and his closest friends to channel their grief into a meaningful event. APRN's Annie Feit has the story.
On a recent evening, headquarters for the Little A Triathlon is a canvas yurt perched on a mountainside in Eagle River. This is Tony Pirelli's pottery studio, and Tony, along with the small group of friends assembled here, has been in on organizing the triathlon from the very first meeting.
I felt sort of like, whatever it is, I'm making the awards. You know, that's the role I want to play.
The triathlon medals are drying on shelves nearby. Clay rings stamped with the words Little A Triathlon. Tony slaps a square of heavy, dark clay into a suitable mound for the pottery wheel. Tonight's mission is to make a dozen or so ceramic gifts to give away at the awards banquet. Before the clay starts spinning, Tony gets a quick consult from JT. Then.
What would you like to see? Anything in particular? Teacups, mugs, bottles?
I want to see whatever you feel like creating. I am just...
The Little A Triathlon is named for JT's daughter, Avery, who died of brain cancer last fall, a few weeks shy of her third birthday. 2 months later, JT ran a 5K fundraiser for an Eagle River fifth grader named Maddie, who had an aggressive form of ovarian cancer. That race gave JT an idea.
I came to realize that a part of my journey, what would help me through my journey would be doing something that got me from the role of being a supported person to one that supported others. That would actually help me kind of move through life with my grief. And it also gives me a chance to continue to talk about Avery, you know, kind of keep her present.
JT wants the triathlon to be a yearly event that benefits the family of a child with cancer. He's organized other race events, so he knew he was taking on a big project. There have been hundreds of tasks, large and small, like designing the course, finding a t-shirt vendor, and settling on a date where the lake wouldn't be too cold for the half-mile swim. JT, a high school teacher, says the work has filled a spot in his day where Avery used to be.
She would usually nap until about 3:30, and so I would go and pick her up at daycare every day in the afternoon, and we'd have 2+ hours every day to go outside and play. And so in a way, I've kind of used that time every day to still do something with Avery.
Now, 2 months out from race day, most of the logistics are falling into place.
The thing now is having people sign up for it, you know.
Becky King is another friend who's helping out. The triathlon has 100 openings for individuals and teams, and right now only about half those spots are taken.
I think that's our next challenge, is making sure that we fill all those spots so that we can raise funds for Maddie and her family.
Becky, JT, and this group of friends want to make sure they raise enough money to really make a difference for Maddie's family. And watching them work and talk on this one evening in this tiny pottery studio, I can feel how much this goal means to them and why it means so much to them. They're not just helping JT through his grief. They're grieving together and turning that experience into something that will benefit the wider community. They were all close to Little A. They loved her like a member of their own family.
You know, I always sort of dreamed I would teach Avery how to do things with clay or do things with wood. And so we're kind of doing it together that way.
It's been overwhelming sometimes, the amount of support. It really, it's incredible, but I mean, it's almost been overwhelming. I don't know what to do with it. You know what I mean? Like, what do you do with all this love that you get? I hope to throw some of it right back at everybody through this event.
Tony hands JT a teacup.
It's really soft, but we just blowtorch this surface. So okay, so perfect right now.
JT picks up an old newsprint stamp, just one letter, a little A, and gently presses it into the damp clay.
Okay. I might do that as a center and then do something around it.
Great.
Is that all right?
A week later, Tony sends me an email. He says he doesn't know quite how to express it, but the Little A Triathlon is an example of how JT and his wife Adrian are choosing to focus on living, on experience, and generosity. He imagines after Avery's death, that must require enormous amounts of clarity and heart. And that, Tony says, is a powerful gift.
That's great.
That's okay?
Yep.
Don't need to touch that up.
Gives okay. A character.
All right.
For AK, I'm Annie Feit.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Jenna Holcomb in Anchorage. Holcomb is a lifelong Alaskan and worldly traveler.
I left for the first time, yeah, when I was 18 and went down to California. And I met a guy, and then we moved to Milwaukee together, and then essentially since then have gone on like some very major trips together. Went to like Central America, and last year I did like a 4-month bike tour in Europe. I also did like a 12,000 mile motorcycle trip across North America. So yeah, and then I come here to make money. Family, money, mountains. Not particularly in that order. I can't really say that I would stay anywhere long term. It's like the only place I always feel comfortable coming back to, as opposed to any other city or like place I've ever been, has never felt like somewhere I could just come back to easily. I mean, you have everything here. There's fishing, camping, biking, backpacking, bike packing, anything. So there's so much. Being at the top of Wolverine Peak and looking down and seeing, you know, like vast expanse of mountains, hanging out at Aklutna Lake, which is, you know, obviously the water reservoir for Anchorage, which is really interesting, and like staying in that cabin during the winter that's out there, and like listening to the ice crack, calling out echoes and hearing it back 17 times. I don't want Alaska to look like Texas in 100 years in terms of like, you know, mining and drilling and stuff. So that's always a big bummer when our politics don't exactly line up with, you know, what's right for nature. So that sucks. Like, it's called the last frontier for a reason. And I think that if we degrade that so quickly, we're going to end up looking like the rest of America. And it'd be really sad to see all of this go. Alaska is magical. It's the whole thing.
Jenna Holcomb lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Annie Feit and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Andrew Kitchenman and Jeremy Shea in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer in Wasilla, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a good weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC.
And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.